Hey guys, you're listening to Blockshots, a place where we share insights directly from the leaders and builders of the cryptosphere. This podcast is our latest media offering delivered to you by the CoinCode Cap team. So with us on the podcast today, we have Rahul Sethuram from Connex Network. Connex Network is a L1 and L2 cross-chain interoperability solution, which we're going to learn more about from Rahul himself. So Rahul, welcome to the Blockshots podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. Thank you to Blockshots and Akash for having me.
Awesome. So I'm going to start this by asking you to do a small introduction on you and then maybe get into your journey into crypto and Connex.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, like you said, my name is Rahul Sethuram. I'm one of the co-founders of Connex. I'm the CTO. Just a little bit of background about myself. So I'm born and brought up in the Silicon Valley in the San Francisco Bay Area. I am an electrical engineer by background. So I started my career at Tesla, actually, which was one of my dream job, basically, to work in electric cars. Then long story short, throughout that process, I kind of got more interested in software, stock trading, financial stuff. This was like pre-Bitcoin, but like, you know, in the early days before I was into anything like that. Then I started to get into entrepreneurship. I left Tesla to start my own company in the like fintech space. It was traditional finance, stock trading stuff. You know, that eventually took its course and got acquihired. Then I basically had a little gap where I was trying to figure out what to do next. And this was in 2017. So this is about the time that I discovered Ethereum. Then I started playing around with things. Since I'm a software developer, I wanted to explore it from the development side. So I started going to developer meetups, started participating in hackathons. And eventually that's how I met my co-founder Arjun, also in San Francisco at the time. And we kind of just talked about the initial idea for Connex, which was very different than what it is now. But, you know, we got along. We kind of had very similar values and visions for the space and where we think things are going. So that's how we got together. And that's, you know, where things are now.
Very interesting. And may I just point out, I am also an electrical engineer. So to that. Yeah, never really got a chance to, you know, actually work in the industry though. Sort of just started into crypto right away. But yeah. So
it's a great background to have, I think, you know, because it's, as you know, it's very difficult. So I think it prepares you for a lot of things, even if you don't end up using it. Like the training itself prepares you for a lot of difficult things in life, in my opinion.
Definitely. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, you're sort of like, at that point, you're sort of like, you know, I can do anything if I've done this. So you guys, I believe, at Connex Network are about cross-chain interoperability. And that too is focused around L2 cross-chain interoperability. So would love for you to, you know, break this down a little bit for the audience as to what Connex is, what cross-chain interoperability means, and yeah, just go at it like from a fundamental level.
Totally. So we've kind of redesigned our interoperability like design as well as our like pitch and how we describe Connex like a few times over the course of this, and we've iterated on our product itself. Well, the way we started out, most people kind of know us from the original kind of thing that we did first, or not really first, but like how we kind of like came onto the scene is through state channel technology. So this was like the original way to scale Ethereum, right? So then we built basically the first production state channel network. We launched with SpankChain. We kind of built it out there and then extracted that out into its own thing. And then, you know, then rollups came along, and rollups kind of like took the center stage as like the real true scaling solution. Throughout this process, we actually realized that you can use state channels to settle transactions between different chains. So it kind of built up our initial idea around interoperability. And so we built our very first system around state channels itself. you know, this worked for a while. That was our original like X-Pollinate cross-chain bridge. There are a lot of downsides and trade-offs with state channels, including like a lot of complexity, a lot of like, browser-based computation that's happening. So it's not very integrable into smart contracts or things like that. So what we've done is we end up redesigning our protocol from scratch, from the ground up, which we did on our first iteration called NXTP. Then we did this again. Now we're in the process of redesigning it again from the ground up in a new way, which is kind of taking all the stuff we've learned and like repurposing it again. But basically, to answer your question, like what is Connext? Connext is what we think of as like a modular interoperability stack. So we think that there's interoperability in layers. I can go into each of the layers like individually, but basically, like the very bottom layer is like the transport layer. So this is our decentralized network of liquidity providers. Then basically built on top of that, you have like a messaging layer, and then you have a communication layer. Then at the very top, you have basically a liquidity layer. So what we've done is we've kind of modularized all these different things into what we call like a total interoperability solution. And what we want to do is build basically various parts of this stack up into actual full-fledged solutions and give developers the tools to build real cross-chain applications. Like right now, we've basically distilled all of this into a liquidity network, which is our cross-chain bridging capability. So this allows you to transfer value between different chains, and we're very chain agnostic. So it doesn't matter if it's a roll-up, it doesn't matter if it's like a different type of L2, it doesn't matter if it's another L1. It doesn't even really need to matter if it's an EVM, but right now, yes, we are focused fully on EVMs and EVM compatible chains. But eventually, you know, we can port our smart contracts anywhere. And one big distinction that Connext has, you know, compared to like other solutions in the market, there's a few different ways to bridge. And if you look at our Medium, we've like written a lot about this, about all the different ways to bridge, the taxonomy of different cross-chain bridges. There's basically an easy way, which is the way that like a lot of people do, and basically the way that where you can like the way that most people think about bridging, right, is you have like a group of validators that is watching one chain, and when you put funds on one chain, they will give you funds on another chain. And this system, right, it's easy, it's extensible, it works, but it's very trusted. And this is
like Tor chain, right?
Yes, exactly. Tor chain, like Stellar, Seabridge, Synapse, many of these solutions, Axelar, they all kind of use this like external validator set that is basically creating their own set of validators that is the bridge.
Got it.
And one big difference, just to get a little bit into it, is Connext. We've always kind of gone past this approach because we don't think this is like the perfect approach. We think that there is no reason that you should be adding extra trust assumptions on top of the chains you are bridging between. So all the trust should fall directly on the chains that you are bridging between and nothing else. So we've always operated with using the chain itself as the validation and using basically like a fraud proof based mechanism to transfer between the chains.
Right. Makes sense. So you mentioned that, you know, you guys have gone deep into the cross-chain niche of the market and basically looked at everything that's under the sun building this and come up with a solution that is different and better, in your own words. So can you explain a little bit about how the design of what you guys do is different from, you know, validator-based cross-chain solutions? And correct me if I'm understanding this correctly, is that bridges are just an application of like one application of what cross-chain interoperability protocols can do. What you guys are aiming for is more like cross-chain interactions between like smart contracts on different chains, something like that.
Yes, correct. So the first point about like how Connext is different. So in a nutshell, our first implementation, so our NXTP, our current protocol that is live right now, is using a concept called atomic locks. So basically, a liquidity, a user will put locked funds on one chain. And this lock is basically, you know, this lock can be anything, but the way we've implemented it, it's the user's signature is required to unlock these funds. And then the router, who's a liquidity provider, will see that the funds are locked on chain A, then they will put a mirrored locked version of those funds on chain B. So that basically allows them to collect the funds on chain A when they're unlocked. And then there's like a fee included in this, of course. So that's what incentivizes the routers to do this. So then the user will basically see that the router put the funds on chain B, and then it will provide its signature to unlock. So using this, the user and the router are together verifying both pieces of the system. And that is why you don't have any external parties validating anything. It's only up to the parties that are concerned about the actual trade going through.
Makes sense. So one of the things that has often come up, and we're going to go back into, you know, other applications of a cross-chain interoperability protocol, is concern around, you know, security with this kind of technology, right? And for, let's say, Ethereum bridges to a new blockchain, it exposes, it might not be a big problem for the newer chain, which doesn't have a lot of liquidity, but on the side where there's a lot of risk, a lot of money locked up, there's a big concern around, you know, bridges getting hacked. We saw Wormhole getting hacked, and I mean, I don't truly understand how those things work, but can you talk a little bit about how these protocols aim to solve this problem, given that, you know, people are so concerned about cross-chain interoperability being a big security concern?
Right, totally. So, I mean, just to first get this out of the way, the Wormhole hack was a smart contract bug, so it wasn't actually like a bridge exploit in the sense that, like, you know, there wasn't like a validator set that was corrupted or something. Like, you know, it would be nice to point at that and be like, oh, that's because they had this trusted validator set. It's like a multi-sig bridge, basically.
Right.
But in this case, it actually wasn't. It was a smart contract bug that on the Solana side that allowed the malicious party to mint an infinite amount of Solana ETH on the other side, and then basically bridge it back the other way. So, you know, in terms of like the smart contract bug, this smart contract risk can be anywhere, unfortunately. It can be like in your DeFi app. It can be like in your roll-up bridge contract. It can be in like basically anything. So in that sense, yeah, there is smart contract risk, of course. But with that said, you know, of course, like I said, the validator bridge, the multi-sig bridge basically is probably the weakest in terms of security on a bridge, because all you have to do to take that bridge over is you have to like basically 51% attack the validator set. You have to like convince the validators that, like, you know, there is more in it for them to like rug pull the bridge than to like keep their proof of stake, you know, because essentially they're staking some amount saying that this is true. And then if the amount that they're staking is not as much as the amount that's in the bridge, then the incentives are automatically aligned for them to like rug pull the bridge. Like if you look at an example, like this is like Polygon Bridge. I'm not saying Polygon Bridge is going to get rugged. The Polygon team is great, and like, you know, we love them a lot, but their proof of stake bridge, the amount that's at stake is much less than the amount that is actually transferred through the bridge. So, you know, with that, you can see how the incentives are really like misaligned there.
Right. I mean, economically, it kind of makes sense to try and attack something right. like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the system I described with how Connects works, it's impossible to do that because, you know, our liquidity providers, the way the system works is the worst case thing that happens is that the liquidity provider just doesn't provide liquidity for you. In that case, your funds basically just expire after some lockup period and then you get them back. So you can get censored in that sense, but you cannot get like rug pulled, which we think is a much better trade-off. And of course, there are crypto economic ways to stop even the censorship aspect of it using like stake and slash mechanisms, stuff like that, which we are also thinking about rolling out in the future.
Makes sense. Makes sense. So in terms of application of this technology and use case, and I'm going to get into cross-chain dApps in a bit, but the main application of what I see cross-chain interoperability protocols doing is that to essentially allow people to move liquidity from one chain to another chain, usually in form of like a IOU token where you lock something on one side and you get something else on the other side. So can you talk about some other applications of a cross-chain protocol and also talk about L2 cross-chain and what that is about?
Other applications in terms of like, so one thing that we've always been really serious about at Connext is like opening up the design space more than just cross-chain transfers. Like from the very beginning, what we enabled is this thing called call data passing. So instead of just passing funds from one chain to another, you can pass call data. So that means anybody who fulfills your transaction on the receiving side of the chain can also send this call data on your behalf, like a meta transaction, which can call some other contract on the other chain. So what this does is it basically abstracts the process of needing gas funds on the receiving chain. So, you know, this is mainly a UX optimization here, but what we think is like our thesis around this stuff is that like cross-chain right now is like really bad. The applications are not designed to be cross-chain. It's basically like each chain is its own application and these things are very siloed. But we think, you know, if you can roll out some of these new features, if you can, you know, make use of this like call data passing feature, you can actually abstract the fact of the user spending gas on the receiving chain completely. So, you know, for example, just as a simple example, you could have like Aave pools where you show Aave pools on every single chain, and then you basically don't even show which chain it's on. You just show what the like deposit returns are, and then the user will just like press a button and their funds will instantly go into that chain and the bridging will happen for them and the deposit will happen for them and you know everything will happen automatically and the user won't even have to think about that. So that's really our vision, is to like design a world where the underlying chain like doesn't even really matter.
Right. So essentially what I'm hearing is that you're probably going to reduce like a 5-step process that we have today from moving to dApp 1 on L11 to dApp 1 on L12. And you're going to make it like an atomic transaction with just one click and you can get that done.
Exactly. And like right now, you know, it's this whole process. You have to go to like a bridge and like there's like a whole big thing around the bridging and like, oh, like I have to go here, put my funds in the bridge, wait, get my funds out. Like you said, it's like a 5-step process. Then you put it in this pool and all that really in the end is kind of unnecessary. Like users don't need to think
Makes sense. So can you talk a little bit about now what is L2 cross-chain interoperability? Because this is something that I hadn't come across or, you know, had come across, but haven't like really understood too well, especially as to how it's different from L1 cross-chain interoperability. So would love to, you know, go into it a little bit.
Yeah, this is actually a really interesting topic for us as well, because, you know, the L2s, basically, they already have a message passing bridge between them, which is the roll-up bridge. Right. And Hop is a good example of a protocol that has taken heavy advantage of this and basically built their entire system around utilizing the roll-up bridge as a message passing layer. So it basically allows you like expressive communication between all these different roll-ups. And what I have seen, I've done some, like I try to keep up with the research in this space, but there's a lot of research going on right now around like optimizing rollups and like making rollups even better and communication around rollups better. And like recently there's this thing called like dank sharding, which is a way to like basically increase, I haven't researched enough into it, so I'm probably gonna butcher the explanation, but it's basically a way to like restructure the data availability layer of Ethereum so that the data is available essentially to all rollups equally in a trustless way. So the long story short is eventually the bridging process between rollups will basically be completely gone. Like the rollups will be able to sync with each other directly and not even need bridges. Like they can directly through like layer one send funds between each other and communicate with each other. And like, you know, things called DAMM, which is basically an AMM with shared liquidity across rollups, is actually going to be possible using this construction of like dank sharding and stuff like that. So, you know, the bottom line is you won't even need cross rollup bridges in like the long-term future of Ethereum, which is really cool. But that also tells us, you know, we should kind of focus on how do we bridge between these ecosystems. Like if you think about it, like this is also how Cosmos IBC is like a natively verified bridging protocol between the different Cosmos chains.
Right.
XCP on like Polkadot also has this. So all these like new, like newer, like multi-chain environments kind of like have their own internal bridging processes that are much more efficient, much more trustless, and like basically like the perfect bridges because they natively validate each other, right? So when the chains natively validate each other, that's like the perfect bridge because it's instant, it's cheap, and it's like completely trustless. It's like fully decentralized.
Right.
So within each of these, and then the E2 rollup ecosystem is becoming like that. That's what I'm trying to say. So like you don't really need like an external third party bridge. What you need is bridges between these different ecosystems. And you know, Vitalik has been kind of outspoken about the fact that like, you know, cross-chain bridging, cross-chain apps should not really be a thing. It's like I don't know what he said, multi-chain, not cross-chain or something like that, where he's very much advocating for, yeah, cross rollup is the future, not like not cross-chain. Which, you know, it has its merits, but what we kind of think is that people are looking to do this anyways. Like, no matter what you do, people are going to be trying to bridge between this, and somebody's going to put out a centralized solution. People are still going to use that. A lot of people are going to lose money. So, you know, instead of like trying to stop this from happening, what we want to do is we just want to build the best tooling for this purpose and like let people use it however they want to use it. Like if we can build a good decentralized solution to this problem, we're just going to put it out there and then let people make use of it however they want to make use of it.
Great. So in terms of, you know, how you guys make money off of it, I'm assuming there's a fee, there's going to be a fee switch in all of it, and it's not completely like a public goods thing that you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, right now we are not making money off of it. We are basically, we're basically just building out the network and building out the potential for liquidity providers to make money off of it. So they're the ones that collect the fees right now. So Connext as a network right now is not making any money off of it.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So moving on from that, I want to get into, you know, cross-chain dApps and all the hype that this thing has. So would love for you to, you know, again, from the very basics ground up level, go over what these are, what use cases, what use cases are enabled by having cross-chain dApps and what it even means. For example, like what I understand by cross-chain dApps right now is that, you know, if you have, say, Aave on Ethereum versus Aave on Arbitrum versus Polygon, a cross-chain interoperability solution is something that will allow you to treat the entire thing as one instead of like individual protocols that it behaves like right now. So for example, Aave pools can act as one pool if you have like a cross-chain relay between them.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, like you kind of hit it on that, which is a big part of cross-chain dApps is actually abstracting out the bridge part of it. So you know, making it a unified interface, doing like some basically like smarter things in the UI to basically abstract out the process of the cross chain completely. Like, if you really think about it, like, why are users going to other chains? Mainly a big part of this is just because they're trying to chase yields from like one chain to another chain. So what you can do is you can build cross-chain yield optimizers. That to me seems like the very next logical step in cross-chain. It's like, you know, you should get yield on your USDC, but why does it need to be only on Ethereum? It should be able to be like take advantage of yields wherever the yields are. To do that, you need like a truly trustless like bridging mechanism. That's why nobody's really done it, is because nobody's really launched like a fully expressive like trustless bridge mechanism that can mm-hmm. actually pass data through. And that's kind of the next evolution of Kinext as well.
Right. Okay. I mean, yeah, that makes sense. One thing that I'd always wondered is that, you know, in terms of actual user activity, like you mentioned, that right now the reason people are jumping from, you know, Ethereum to different chains is a combination of high gas fees versus, you know, better yield farming opportunities on new projects, right, that are launching on different chains. But the problem I see is that, you know, a lot of these projects are just copycats of something that already exists on Ethereum. So in a future where, you know, cross-chain is really like well-developed, where I can like access Aave pools on Ethereum while sitting on Phantom, what do you think that will do to the native dApp market on these L1s? Like, for example, would I even need a dApp to, you know, go cross-chain if I can just access it through like a messaging interoperability protocol from some other chain?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because like at the end of the day, it's like, you know, it's all a means to an end. So if the end goal is to get a better yield somewhere, like why do you need to do the whole bridging part? Like, it should all be kind of built into one interface. Your wallet should basically change whatever, you know, do whatever it needs to do to get you to use whatever app you need to use.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then I mean, games is like a whole nother thing on its own. Like, you know, I'm pretty big these days on like Treasure DAO, which launched on Arbitrum, and it gives people like a really good reason to go to Arbitrum just to play these games. So, you know, things like that also are going to be there. And these are going to be like native kind of games, and you'll have to go to a certain chain to play these games. I think, you know, no matter what, I always see that there's going to be multiple chains, because these chains essentially are like communities on their own, you know, like they have their own set of participants. They have like a bunch of people that are like very passionate about certain chains. Like if you look at Phantom, for example, Phantom is like, it's kind of like an Ethereum copycat in some extent. It's not really doing anything that much more creative on top of Ethereum, but it has a very like built out, fleshed out, like thriving ecosystem of like dApps that are basically innovating a lot on DeFi stuff. And they're only launching on Phantom because Phantom is like, has that kind of like reputation, that community. So, you know, I feel like it's not going to be possible to bring all of it back onto like a single chain or even like rollups or something like that, just because there's going to be like this, there's like this flourishing ecosystem of these different chains and different stakeholders. And like, you know, somebody's always going to try to do something better than Ethereum. You know, as much of an Ethereum maximalist, I love Ethereum. I'm always like, you know, Ethereum number one, but I've grown to realize that, you know, there's no matter what, there's going to be people that try to come and compete with Ethereum and who end up innovating on their own. So let's just embrace that fact and live with that fact and make the best tools we can for that fact.
Interesting. No, I just, mm-hmm.
Sorry. I didn't want to interrupt, but I know you were kind of interested more in like the fact about like cross-chain app use cases. So another thing that we didn't really touch on yet is like cross-chain governance. I think this is going to be like a big thing that starts to come up, because there's a lot of projects now have tokens that have been bridged to different chains, but all the voting still only happens on one chain, which is like really problematic. I think, you know, what we're going to start to see is like these DAOs and organizations are going to try to find ways to allow their users that have bridge tokens to other chains to be able to vote with those tokens on other chains. And again, like that, you know, requires truly decentralized bridging protocols, which I think is only going to be achievable once we get that part of the Connext ecosystem
Makes sense.
Up and running.
Makes sense. So another thing that I wanted to understand a little bit is that, you know, the role of a token in a cross-chain application. So first of all, like, do you guys have a token with Connext Network?
We do not have a token, no.
Okay, but let's say, you know, I mean, tokens for a DeFi protocol versus like a L1 versus some NFT project, you know, you understand that these are completely different use cases. So can you explain like the role of native tokens in a cross-chain interoperability protocol and what they're for?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I won't say anything specifically because, you know, Connext does not have a token at this time and there's no plans to at the moment. But in a nutshell, like what Connext is like infrastructure. We have a lot of like off-chain infrastructure. We have a lot of like off-chain actors that we're coordinating. And, you know, when you have this like group of off-chain actors and you're coordinating a bunch of different people and you have like all these different incentives that you have to align, then like what's the best way to align these incentives? You know, obviously cryptography is like the first, so you make it so they can't do something. But when you're operating outside the rules of cryptography, the next best thing you can do is like crypto economic security. So with that, you know, then you get into these things about like, how do you incentivize these actors to all like behave on the same page about things? Well, the most obvious and easiest way to do it is a staking and slashing mechanism. So mm-hmm. you get these off-chain actors to stake some kind of token and they get slashed if they do something wrong. Like a big thing, you know, we always try to like not I wouldn't say compare ourselves, but like we look up to, of course, a lot is the Graph protocol, because they are like base level cross-chain agnostic or chain agnostic like infrastructure. And they have like a similar setup to how we have with our liquidity providers. They have like graph indexers, and these indexers are basically incentivized to properly index smart contracts and provide subgraphs, and they have to submit proof of indexing or else they get slashed using their GRT token. So I would just say, like, if you look at the graph and how they've launched their token, released their token, used their token to incentivize you know, a bunch of off-chain actors, that will be kind of how these interoperability protocols launch tokens and make use of tokens in a right. high utility environment.
Right. But correct me if I'm wrong here, but the Graph token, GRT token, it exists on Ethereum. So the graph nodes, the indexes and everything, these are just like some layers they've built on top of existing Ethereum nodes. And is that considered off-chain? Or, I mean...
Well, they are off-chain because they have to run special infrastructure off-chain. Like to run a graph node, you have to run special hardware and you have to like keep this hardware up and running, and it has to like do things at a certain time. So it's like an automated agent that's running off chain. And yeah, like it's not, I mean, I think what you said is it an extension of Ethereum node? It's not, but it uses an Ethereum node. So basically it connects to an Ethereum node, but then it has its own like very like robust set of off chain infrastructure that it runs. Like graph nodes run like a huge database and like provide like a huge API and like, you know, communicate, have a lot of like cross network communication with each other. So like that is what I would define as like an off-chain infrastructure.
Right. I guess what you're saying is that the output validation for what the graph protocol puts out is done off-chain instead of settled on the Ethereum consensus layer.
Right, exactly.
Makes sense. Perfect. So super interesting. And, you know, we've talked about Connex, we've talked about interoperability, cross-chain dApps. What is the future like, I mean, in this space? You know, we've definitely talked about some use cases, you know, cross-chain governance and atomic swaps. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what the future looks like when this technology, like, really starts to shape up, how it affects other spheres of the market, and how you see all of that?
Yeah, totally. So, like, you know, the next evolution is going to be, like, the message passing layer. Like I said, like, liquidity is pretty easy to move around because, you know, it's just fully fungible things from one chain to another chain. You can mint it on one chain, burn it on another chain. You can lock it up on one chain, unlock on another chain. It's kind of the same thing. But, like, message passing is a little harder. Like, I talked about call data passing, which we can do today. But call data passing is different because that's basically a permissionless call that you can make. So when you make a call from one chain to another chain, you can't guarantee who calls it on the other chain. And you can't guarantee that the person who calls it on the other chain is, like, calling exactly what you said you wanted to call on the first chain, because there is no, like, cross-chain verification mechanism. That is basically, you know, that's why each of these chains don't know what the other chain is doing. And you can't really know that in a trustless way. So that is how we're, like, evolving our protocol. The next version of our protocol builds on top of Nomad protocol, which we formed a close partnership with. So Nomad is basically building, like, a lower level messaging protocol built on, like, fraud proof system, again, like, similar to, not similar, I would say, but, like, you know, in the same vein as the fraud proof based mechanism that our liquidity bridge used at first. So what we're building is we're using them as the base layer, and we're building all the tooling on top of them to make this whole system usable within dApps and like provide fast liquidity and basically provide all the infrastructure to make this whole process usable. So then when you get a message on chain B, you can essentially be sure that this is the same message that was propagated from chain A because of the guarantees of the protocol itself.
Yeah.
So then if you have that guarantee, then you can do much more interesting things. And that's where the basis of the whole cross-chain governance comes from. Because cross-chain governance is hard because, you know, when a message shows up on your governance portal, you have to be able to be sure that it came from a trusted user, or you can trust that the user on chain A who holds the real tokens actually made that message and sent it to you on chain B. So that's basically the future use cases that we are trying to enable here. And that's how the future is going to look, where you have trustworthy message passing cross chains, you have abstracted UIs where the bridge is no longer a thing that you need to worry about. It's all kind of built into the dApps, and it all kind of, like, works very well and easily.
Makes sense. Thanks for that explanation. The final question that, you know, I want to put out to you, and post that we can close this, is around, you know, a little bit on the product side of things. So you're the CTO, and I believe you're fully immersed on the development side of things. How do you guys take strategic decisions around, like, let's say, if you had to determine which chains you want to start off with first, which developer communities you want to target first? And, I mean, a little bit more of an extension to that, how do you do this while picking up your team and building your team at Connext?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a couple parts in there. Like, first of all, the chain bit, right? So how do we add new chains? For us, actually, the process of adding a new chain is very simple. Technically, all we have to do is deploy contracts and, like, set up some infrastructure, like relayers, subgraphs, things like that. And once we do that, we can basically flip the switch on. But then the bigger hurdle is, like, how do we get liquidity on the chain? So what we do is we basically source liquidity for a chain. So we ask our liquidity providers, we ask our community, hey, who wants to, like, provide liquidity for this chain? Then, assuming we can, like, get enough interest in that, then that's how we will decide to launch a chain. So I would say first it comes from the community itself. Community starts asking for a new chain, or, like, we know that we want to target this new chain because it's coming out soon. Like, mm-hmm. say, Evmos, for example, you know, Evmos is getting a ton of hype. So we know we want to be deploy there and like give our users the ability to bridge to and from there instantly. So what we've done is we like, it's kind of like a BD process in the end where we have to work closely with our liquidity providers, closely with our community, and basically stage everything so that the liquidity is there on day one.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on the, let's say, team side, and how do you, you know, pick out the right people to build this out with you?
Yeah. I mean, hiring is always kind of a challenge. And the thing with Connext is basically, you know, we've been around maybe for close to 5 years now. 4 out of those 5 years, we have been basically between 3 and 5 people total.
Wow.
Only in the last year, so basically from like 1 year ago until today, we've scaled up now to 15 people. So like we have basically gone through our like first real scaling period. And of course, it's been a challenge, you know, as it is for any company in this space, is like finding good talent, hiring good talent. We're always competing, you know, anytime we want to hire somebody, it's like they have 4 other offers. And like we always have to like kind of like really pitch ourselves as like a reason why they want to come work for us. So, you know, we have to kind of like be salesmen almost and like sell our vision and really like get the right people on board. And I think, you know, that also helps on our end, is we want people who are most aligned with our vision and want to be like in this space and do what we're doing. Because honestly, the bottom line is like, you know, building blockchain stuff is pretty hard on its own. But then when you're building like multi-blockchain stuff, it just like multiplies the complexity. So like, you know, we deal with complexities of each chain and like basically put together, so like everything, all the complexities kind of multiplied. And like you see this a lot in the infrastructure, that, you know, when we build infrastructure and it has to work on all these different chains, and like we start testing it on one chain acts differently than another chain, it's like it's a bunch of complexity. That's why we really try to find and hire people that you know, want to deal with this kind of complexity, because they enjoy the problems that we're dealing with, and they are on board with us to see the same vision that we're seeing.
Great. Yeah. And with that, I wish you, you know, best of luck for what you're doing at Connext, and thank you for giving your time.